Hello and welcome everybody to the Melomantic Podcast. This is a value for value production about video games. My name is Dylan.
My name is Victim.
I'm Rick.
Welcome to episode 88. That's a lot of fucking episodes. Can you believe we're that many episodes deep? It's mostly because we've been consistent this year about like the upload. I can't remember last time we missed an episode, actually.
I know, we're doing real good.
Last year it was like every other episode was like, skip, next week.
We'll do it again.
I probably just jinxed us for the next fucking few episodes, but you know what?
Look, as long as you're available, it's not a problem, because I like if Vic or I are sick, we can just do a two-man show.
So, I'm trying something new with the intro. I said we're a value-for-value production about video games. Now, I feel like I don't think anyone would argue or fight us if we said we are the first value-for-value podcast about video games. I think that's the fucking truth. We adopted it pretty fucking early. And we've been doing this since 2016, before Value for Value was a thing. So it's like...
I mean, you might be able to say you're the only.
At this rate, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Video game podcasts are not that popular. Because video game media is heavily skewed towards, like, the YouTube video essay format and the listicle format, right?
Yeah.
Well, right. And, you know, a lot of the places that do have podcasts, it's... I mean, not to say that we're... primarily podcasters or anything. I don't put it on my resume. But like that's like a secondary facet to the other things that they do.
Right. And it's just like a lot of people who call themselves podcasters, but they talk about video games, like a lot of it's like YouTube content creators or just people that just a couple guys in a room talking about shit, right? And it's like that's valid. That's people like that, right? You know, I'm not trying to put that shit down. But like they're just making shit for YouTube, maybe Spotify, sometimes both. But like all this podcasting 2.0 stuff is really important for like sustainability and breaking up monopolies. So it's like, I think we're doing the righteous thing here by adopting podcasting 2.0. That's just,
I mean, honestly, I do feel good about all of my actions, of course.
Yes. Like everything I do is correct.
Yes. Really, if people were more like me, the world would be better.
Speaking of podcasting 2.0, let's read the boosts. So we got a boost last time from our friend of the show Merlin with 1617 sats. I feel like I should not that one. I don't have the appropriate fucking soundboard. I'm
one of those three. It is the right answer, right?
One of these is gonna be the fucking right one. He says in response to something that we were talking about last time, that the Phantom Pain was his first Steam controller game, discovered the wonders of motion aiming. I have not used the Steam controller, but I know motion aiming is pretty sweet. I know the six axis used it. I remember that's the name of the old PS3 controller, if you forgot, a six axis. It was fucking weird. Yep. I remember I played a lot of Warhawk when the PS3 first entered my living room. not when it first came out, I was poor, right? But when the price finally came down, I actually bought it secondhand from someone else. But like one of the launch titles for the PS3 was called Warhawk, and they didn't have motion aiming, but it had motion flight controls. So like I was able to just move the controller around to like control my aircraft, which I thought was pretty sick. But yeah, plus one for the Steam controller. If only they still sold it.
Yeah, I'd only heard good things about it. You know, talking about, like, that kind of proprietary stuff that just doesn't go anywhere, we've got just a ton of those peripheries. Like, we'll talk more about them later, but that's definitely one of, like, the hits against Sony lately has been, like, the amount of R&D they've thrown into just useless products.
There's so much negativity about Sony right now, and don't worry, we will joined in the curb stomping here shortly, but I have
it's too easy not to.
I have other curb stomping news to share. So today it is May the 16th in the year of our Lord 2024, and coming from @ToonHive at Twitter, we have received news that today is the day that Rooster Teeth has officially closed down. What a momentous occasion. I just brings us here to my eye. Fuck Rooster Teeth.
Yeah, they finally let the motherfucker die. Like,
yeah.
Like, I know that they announced that they were letting it die already, but, like, today's the day.
And I love how it's not even getting, like, that crazy attraction on Twitter right now. It's got, like, 1,000 posts.
It just needed to go, like, ultimately is what it comes down to, though, right? Like,
they will rest in piss. Like, holy shit, fuckers.
In terms of Twitter, that's a pretty silent death, honestly.
I mean, I don't even know why the Twitter algorithm put this particular account in my eyeballs. This tweet was 15 hours ago, and it's only got, like, 400,000 views. I guess that's kind of a lot by Twitter standards, but...
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say that I definitely am sad to see them go, but it definitely also kind of makes me happy to see them go because they were just decaying. It was like watching a loved one sit there and like decay, and you can't do anything about it except watch, which is just, that's not fun. Nobody wants to do that. They should have closed their doors 10 years ago.
They should have closed their doors after, you know, Monty joined the great land party in the sky.
What happened preceding that is pretty much what killed the company for me, honestly.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, rest in peace, Monty and rest in piss, Rooster Teeth. So, Anyways, I made a promise to the dear listeners in the last episode that I would make good on my predictions for Stellar Blade. And Vic, I really think you'd enjoy this game, but I'm gonna talk spoilers, and it's okay. The story is not like, if someone spoiled Bloodborne for you, would you still play Bloodborne knowing everything that the public knows about Bloodborne? You would.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not saying Stellar Blade is the new Bloodborne. Don't quote me on that. But people don't turn up for Bloodborne for the story. Some do. Those people are weird. Anyway. So, Stellar Blade, I made a prediction in the last episode. I'm not going to quote myself because I didn't come prepared. But last time we talked, I was like, I thought a third of the way through the game. I was right. And I just gotten a lot of the early, like, primary scenario, cutscene evidence that the characters are all robots and they just think they're humans. That ended up being true. I am now currently in the final dungeon. I have not finished the game yet, but I have some notes about the twist, right? So a lot of what all the reviewers were saying was that the game was predictable in the plot department, right? Like the story was predictable. It wasn't surprising. And I think that's disingenuous because like, yeah, it's not surprising. And in fact, I went out of my way to do all the side quests as soon as they were available. So like my single playthrough is really dragging on. Like I think I'm approaching 40, maybe even 50 hours, right? For this kind of game, that's a lot. Because it's not fucking Elden Ring, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is more like Metal Gear Rising with a couple open areas. Like, it shouldn't take this long to get through it. But I'm punishing myself by trying to do fucking everything in one playthrough. So as I explored and dug up all the shit, and I looked at all the data logs, I've been talking to all the NPCs, like, to the player, even if you skip all that shit, like what's presented in the primary scenario, it gets pretty obvious pretty early and fast that the characters are all robots and they just don't know it. They think they're the humans because like it, the plot lays it on early while the player's oblivious to everything, just jumping in blind that, you know, are we robots or are we androids or are we people? We don't know. And then the version of history given to the android people is, oh yeah, the humans had to augment their bodies to survive climate change, right? Like now you can be outside without a spacesuit and you can be underwater and breathe forever. It's fine, right? And the twist that they are robots and not humans, like that's not supposed to be surprising. That's the issue I have with all those reviewers. It's like, it's not supposed to surprise the player. It's obvious from the beginning. And I feel like it's on purpose because like what the narrative is showing, and maybe this will like hit harder or better in the Korean dub, I'm still planning to do that in my new game plus run is to go through on Korean, but like all of the characters involved, right, are totally oblivious to the idea of what a human is because they just believe it's them. They're like, humanity has changed over time into what we are today, and like the concept that there was another race of people that existed at the same time that were the old humans and they didn't have cybernetic enhancements is fucking foreign to them, right? And so like they have this really natural like earth-shattering revelation that like kind of shakes them to their core because like they really had no idea, right? Like the concept of a human is like foreign to them, and I thought that was really cool, right? It was like it was a neat twist. It wasn't surprising. It doesn't surprise the player. It surprises the characters, and they react to it. And I thought that was okay. Like I'm not going to criticize them for having it be a predictable twist because I don't think it was trying to hide it from the player at any point.
Right? Yeah. Or at the very least, they were keeping it as a question, but not really hiding the answer.
Yeah, it was fun. It was like dramatic irony, right? It's like, oh, I know this is a thing and they don't, and I'm hoping they will find out, right? And then when they do, it is satisfying. Now, the other thing, another note about the plot being predictable as a dismissive talking point in a review, I'm in the final dungeon. The twist has already happened. It happens before the final dungeon, right? It happens before the point of no return, in fact, right? And I was still side questing well after I had discovered the big twist. So it's like all the twists ahead, like I'm expecting a gauntlet of monsters as a final boss battle, because like in the bestiary, there's like a bunch of like the highest level enemies that are like grayed out that I haven't seen yet. I mean, they're not grayed out. They're just invisible. I don't know what they look like. Right. But there's at least like four of them. And it's like, that's a lot. Like I expected to encounter them by now, but I'm at the point of return already. So, I'm expecting plot twists and sudden twists in the end. And I have all the information at my fingertips, and I don't have a prediction of what those twists are going to be. I don't think I've overlooked anything. I don't think I've missed something. I think whatever twists and turns are ahead are going to be like really unpredictable. The only thing I could possibly think of is the chick from the holograms still alive. Probably some kind of enemy. That is most likely true. And I mean, it might be a spoiler, but I unlock her outfit by beating the game. So it's like, oh, she's probably a villain in the final dungeon, right? But it's like, that's not surprising either. But like, why is she there? What's her motivation? Those things are all unknown to me. That, by definition, is not predictable.
Yeah.
I have all the information, and I'm not sure where it's going to go. And I think that's fine.
Yeah, no, what I think is going to end up happening is it's going to be a whole bucket of nothing is what it's going to come down to, is what people were getting at. It's like, you've already passed the apex of the story, basically, is what it comes down to. In the end, is just going to be the end.
Yeah.
Basically, I think the issue is there's no twist.
I'm hoping it's not, like, that disappointing, because I know what their objective is, and they're going to seek out to go do that objective, but it's like, what will be the aftermath of what they are doing, and what twists and turns are ahead in the final dungeon? Like, there has to be something. It might be disappointing. And if it is, you'll hear about it next episode. But it is probably not going to be like some earth shattering thing that's going to convince me the story is like peak, right? It's not. It never was. It wasn't trying to be peak fiction, right? I don't think Nier Automata is peak fiction either. And people keep comparing it to Nier Automata. But like, I don't like comparing it to Nier Automata, because I feel like they're trying to tell two very different ideas of a story.
Yeah, can we talk about that for a second too, though? Like,
sure.
The idea that like Nier Automata was like the greatest like thing ever, and like people talk about it like it was like pinnacle of fiction, it or the storytelling and writing, whatever. It really wasn't. Yeah. And honestly, I think its gameplay is good, but it's definitely not the best that like out there either. Like,
it's not even Platinum's best work.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I don't want to dog on Automata because it's a great game. It's, everyone should play it. It's just good. Mm-hmm. But I also, I don't know. I feel like the only real part of the story that really matters is the twist, and then like the ending sequences. And maybe, mm-hmm. like, a couple of the, like, intermittent twists. Everything else is rather basic, and, like, a lot of the other characters don't matter.
I think what bothers me the most about Automata's story is it gets a lot of praise from people that only played Automata and didn't play any of the other games in the series. And, like, this is a really obscure and not successful series that nobody expected this many sequels to, and they finally made a sequel, Nier Automata, that was, like, conventionally an okay game, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the other ones were dog shit mechanically, but like interesting in how batshit the story was, and the whole package was fun, right? And I love it. But it's like, they don't know what I've been through. Like, I'm here for a totally different reason than these other fans, right? And how many of them go back and play the other games? I don't know. Maybe a few, especially when they remade Replicant.
I would say Replicant definitely gets a lot of play just because it was remade after the fact, but yeah.
Yeah, but like, I'm not expecting these, you know, fair weather fans to, you know, go back and play Dragon Guard 1, 2, and 3. I mean, old Dragon Guard fans still can't decide if 2 is canon. I mean, it is, but they'll still bitch about it. Yeah. Just because Yoko Taro didn't like pen every single fucking line of dialogue, it's not canon. It's like, that's bullshit. He was involved. He just wasn't the director. It's fine.
Like I think even Replicant, aside from the fact that I think that the way that they handled the storytelling in terms of like progression was worse than Automata, but I think everything that happens like content wise is significantly better than Automata.
Yeah. If Stellar Blade had a better English dub, but changed nothing about the story, I think story for story in isolation, ignoring that Nier is part of a much larger franchise, I think Stellar Blade's the more enjoyable game, even from the plot perspective, right? Because Nier Automata spends a lot of time up its own ass, right? With philosophy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would think we're being like unnecessarily harsh. I don't want anyone to think, me and Dylan both love the shit out of Automata. There's a lot to love there. It's just,
yeah,
it gets way more hype, like astronomically more hype than it deserves. And yeah. I feel like that does a disservice to the game more than it helps.
Well, you know, what it probably is...
Baby's first game type deal?
No, I was going to say, what it probably boils down to is conventionally attractive Lolita android that you play as.
And the fair. Shalligan count of 2B's ass?
Yeah.
That, you know, I might be weird. We've talked about this a little bit with Stellar Blade, actually. I don't really see the appeal in a hot protagonist character. Like, don't get me wrong. If I go see art of her on, like, R34 or something, like, sure. If that's what I'm there for, perfectly fine. Perfectly acceptable. But, like, in terms of, like, playing the game, I'm going to look at her ass once, like, damn. Or her chest once, maybe. And then I'm just going to play the fucking game.
Well, that's kind of the thing. Way back in the olden times, when there were basically only like three options for MMOs, there was one called Dark Age of Camelot, and I, like everybody in my town, basically if you were over 30, you played the game for whatever fucking reason.
That was before like the big surge of MMOs.
This predates WoW. I want to point that out.
Yes.
And I was talking to somebody that, you know, he was a part-time owner at a cards and comic shop that I played Warhammer at, and like his other job was a nightclub bouncer. Like, so this guy, brick shit house, also nerd. And I asked him, you know, about some stuff, and he was like, you know, I play a woman in these games because if I'm stuck staring at ass all day, I want it to be a good looking ass.
And just in fairness to that, he's not the only one with that sentiment for certain. I've heard the exact same sentiment from someone in my life as well. My uncle, the entire reason I even play female characters in games at all is because he got me into liking playing it was the rogue. I forget the name of the fucking character, the bow character in Diablo 1. Anyways, he got me into playing Diablo 1. I saw him play that character, thought it looked fun. Ever since, since it was my first like pick a character game I ever played as a female, so I was like, well, from now on I play female characters, I guess.
Yeah, and actually it makes a lot of sense because like I have a, you know, like I played a lot of Black Desert and I played Dark Knight, and Black Desert locks characters to like their classes to body and gender.
You know what's funny, regarding Nier Automata, like I don't think anyone's gonna argue that the women in Nier Automata are very attractive. Right.
Oh, they are. Wonderful.
But there's a lot of people who have not played Nier Automata, but have been subjected to the fan art, and they probably think that the women in Nier Automata are like fucking bimbos, right? With like huge tits and ass. But like, you look at fan art of 2B, and you look at her in-game character model, and they are two different fucking women.
You know what's really funny about that too is that sexuality literally plays no part in Automata at all. Not even a little bit. But people still, when you get to the censored word, still think that they think 9S wants to have sex with 2B.
Right.
Take that for what it is.
But I mean, maybe a little bit. Maybe he wants to do a murder suicide sexy roleplay.
I mean,
that's my vote.
That's closer. That's closer to what he wants to do.
The censored word from 9S's story. My vote is that word was kill.
Yeah, me too. Everyone thinks it's fuck, but right. I'm pretty certain it's kill.
Yeah.
Look, also, there are only so many 4-letter words.
Well, if his memory ever came back, he would realize that she had been killing him over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. Oh, no. For a really old game at this point, guys. Come on now.
Look, if you don't know the story to Nier Automata at this point, you have chosen not to learn it.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. But yeah, so it would make sense that it would be kill
because this person, I forget the exact entity's like rationale, but they're basically aware of his whole situation. So they're like talking to him as if he has all of his memories.
That's all, another funny comparison between Stellar Blade and Nier Automata. They're both completely devoid of sex and sexual tension, right? But they both star attractive people, right?
Yeah.
But in Stellar Blade, though brief, the main character, Eve, does talk about her hair and her clothing and actually wants to look cute. That is a thing that she wants to do, right? Whereas 2B, it's like, I'm wearing a uniform. Stop staring at me.
The cool thing about that, though, is that in Stellar Blade, they are not entirely certain if they're human or not. So right. It makes sense that she's trying to grasp at things that make her feel human.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually kind of cool.
Like collecting cans.
Yeah. And yep. there are stores in the town that sell outfits, and there's a barber that will do your hair, which to them means style your hair, not cut your hair, because your hair is part of your body, right? And they don't make those kind of changes, which is kind of funny. Because she has a ponytail with every hairstyle. I don't know if you noticed that.
It feels like when I play Stellar Blade, I'm going to have a wildly different opinion of it than everyone else. Because little tiny things like that, that's what interests me the most in stories.
There's a lot of it to find.
Because like, I think shit like that, like little nuances that people would just overlook or not even pay attention to or give a shit about, is going to be what actually drives me. And I bet you I'm going to come out of it thinking it's like a 10 out of 10 story.
You might, actually. Like, that's the funny thing.
I anticipate that so hard, dude.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the day you eventually get to it. Probably you should get it on sale because your backlog is huge.
That's the plan.
Not that you should wait for a sale, but it's like, why bother when you still need to stream Xenoblade Chronicles 3?
I know, dude.
Game of the decade. You're getting through Cyberpunk at least. I wasn't able to get to your last stream. How'd it go?
Yeah, we went pretty far. I think I'm pretty much. So I did the whatever the fuck it's called there. The
was it the casino mission?
Yes. And that was really fun. I actually enjoyed that a lot.
It was a great level.
I really don't like the side content as much as I thought I would.
Really?
Like, it's good. It's fun. And the narrative side of it's actually, like, a huge upgrade. But everything else about it, gameplay-wise, just feels like a downgrade. Like, it feels like they want you to run and gun. Stealth is entirely out the fucking window most of the time. And it just feels weird. Like, it feels like they half-assed it in a way that I don't know. It doesn't...
Mm.
I mean, I am playing a character that can run a gun, so it doesn't bother me in that regard. But it just feels weird that, like, a game that was so well-crafted in its multifaceted nature in the base game, you, like, lose, like, half of that in the DLC. Most of the time. Not all the time, for the record. But a lot of the time. And it's just like, starting to notice that, like, you like certain missions, if you stealth them, you're glitching the game. Like, I knocked out a boss, killed him, literally shot him in the head, and he respawned later. Because the game did not expect me to do that. So, yeah, things like that.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Stellar Blade, though. Like,
yeah.
I think you would love the shit out of this game, dude. Like, it's so good. I'm hyped for New Game Plus. I'm probably going to not do the side content, though. I'm probably going to speed through it at, like, the speed I want to do it. Because I feel like I had to really slow down to do all the side content. Because it's like, I'm strong enough to continue, but there's still more quests. And it's like... crazy. And
you're getting hit with the JRPG dilemma.
Yeah. So while Phantom Liberty's side content may not be quite your cup of tea, Stellar Blades is a lot more I don't know, vanilla? No. It's like what you might expect from an action RPG, I guess.
It fits the game.
Yeah.
Appropriately. That's fair.
Yeah. And I thought that was really neat. Another cool thing is I got to the second open world area, and thankfully there was no Ubisoft tower, right? So like,
hey, let's go.
Remember, I was worried that there was going to be Ubisoft towers because that solar panel that powered all the campsites, right? But really, it was just a quest that allows you to open up fast travel and rest spots in the zone. And there was another one in the other area, but it was a matter of, oh, go find some robots that were supposed to repair this thing. They are trapped under rubble and shit out in the desert, and you got to go find them. And then as soon as you find them all and you show up at the tower, a really tough boss shows up that you have to go beat. And it's like, okay, this is way better than any Ubisoft tower Ubisoft ever made.
Fuck, if every Ubisoft tower made you have to fight like a big bad to get up it would be a significantly better game.
And the second Ubisoft tower, after I did all that shit, I didn't have to climb it. But there was chests and shit, so I climbed it anyway, right? But I didn't have to.
Well, that's the important part. You don't have to do things.
Yeah.
Ubisoft just can't catch a break.
I mean, the early Ubisoft towers were kind of neat.
when it was their first fucking, you know, thing that they did, it's like, oh, this is interesting. But then when they didn't try to like iterate on it at all, and they still haven't really tried to iterate it on it at all, it just got really tedious and annoying.
I just, you know, right. all the disrespect for Ubisoft. Should we talk about Ubisoft? They're in the news
later. Tell me about Ubisoft, because I don't know.
So Rick doesn't know. I don't think it was today. I think it was either yesterday or the day before that this was announced. But this week,
yeah,
they announced their next Assassin's Creed game, which, what was it called? Shadows? Assassin's Creed Shadows.
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of diverse opinions on Assassin's Creed Shadows. Let me regale you with the facts, right? So, one, it's set in Japan. Right. First time. Yeah. Right. I mean, they saw Ghost of Tsushima and they were like, shit, they got to it first. We better.
Or it might be in China.
I was going to say, or the other one that's coming out, Ghost of Tsushima's one. What's the other one that basically dropped?
That like, open world, like Neo one, something of the ninja.
I don't remember the name.
Yeah, there was one that just came out, and it was already forgettable.
Rise of the Shonen, Ronin?
Yeah. It had really bad...
Almost like mixed Shinobi and Ronin together. Whoops.
Like, that game looked like the gameplay was okay, but like the graphical artifacts were too much to ignore.
It looked like another Neo game. If you're into that, it's probably great. If you don't give a shit, it's probably just mediocre.
Yeah, it's like, that's way too much inventory management for me.
Yeah, pretty much.
What, God of
War? It was kind of neat that you get to build two characters, though, and like play them separately. I actually think that's a really neat idea. It's just that it's too bad it's stuck in that game.
But yeah, what's it called? What was my train of thought? Right, so Assassin's Creed Shadows takes place in Japan. There are two characters as well, a man and a woman. The woman, I think, is some kind of ninja. And the man is an Ubisoft first. This is a historical character that you'll be playing as, like a real dude that actually existed, sort of.
Sort of existed.
So I guess we can touch on that before we get into like I guess the more meta reasons.
So this guy, right, is a historical figure known as Yasuke.
Oh, the black samurai.
Not his birth name.
Yeah, right.
The black samurai.
I don't know if he was actually a samurai or just a bodyguard,
so,
but
here's the thing about Yasuke, and the internet is going to try and tell you that he was either A, just a servant nobody, or B, that he was some badass legendary samurai. I'm here to tell you it was neither.
He was just a guy.
It was something a bit more in the middle. No, he was a retainer to Nobunaga, right? So by nature, yes, retainers were basically the lesser class citizen version of samurai. Effectively. So he was probably trained in how to be a warrior and so on and so forth. But he was a retainer to Nobunaga, which means that he was like a political bodyguard. He probably didn't fight very often or realistically at all. Historically, there isn't a whole lot written about him because unfortunately, you know, black man in a place where black men don't really exist. So he was probably discriminated against. There's probably a lot about that, you know, we could glean. In fact, I think there's some historical accounts of him being called an animal. So, I mean, take that for what you will, you know. But, like, yeah, I think historically, as far as I can, I'm not a historian, so people can correct me if they want. He was only ever said to have fought in one battle, and the person that he was going to fight took mercy on him and sent him to India through the church. At which, 5 months later, his history was cut off. Like, he didn't die, but there's just no more writing about him. That's it. So he became a nobody after that.
They only wrote about him because it was a black man in feudal Japan, and many of them had not seen that before.
Now, I want to state, I think people that are like, oh, this is a problem, they can't do this, that's fucking cringe. What do you mean? The pseudo-history that is Assassin's Creed, they can do whatever the fuck they want. So him being a full-blown samurai in the game is perfectly acceptable. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
The real issue to me is that there's outlets like IGN, and there's other people who are going around trying to say that he's like this fucking legendary badass warrior. They called him a samurai. That means that he could cut like 10 dudes in one swing. It's like, I'm exaggerating, but you get my point. It's just like, historically, there's not a whole lot of evidence to state that he really fought in a lot of battles or had a lot of combat experience.
The glazing is real.
He could be trained. But he probably wasn't like some crazy badass. And I hate to take that from people, because I'm sure there's a lot of black people like, oh, wait, we have something like that? Because I'll tell you right now,
the first time I ever heard about it, like a, I think it was in World War II, there was like a Norwegian, I can't remember where he was from, but there's a soldier who was, he was given honorary samurai. I'm like, oh my god, that's badass. Turns out, no, honorary samurai doesn't mean fucking anything. It's just some like title that like political figures can give to people. It just sounds cool. It's fucking stupid. It's really nothing.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I get the excitement when you first hear it. Mm-hmm. But historically, we've got to be like, you can't rewrite history, guys. Come on.
The glazing is real because this is a real dude that really lived, that was really there. Right. Yeah. So the glazing is real. And the only problem I really have with it is like, it feels disingenuous because this is the first time that Ubisoft has decided to use a real person as the player character.
I can see that as being jarring. That's fair.
And it's like, okay, this was the one they chose to do for their first real historical figure that you're going to play as. Like, I kind of endeared how Assassin's Creed always made up their own original character that lived in a real historical setting.
Yeah,
right?
Because it allowed for the notoriety of them being an assassin to be kind of interesting, right? It's like, oh, maybe they died in obscurity despite what they did because of the way they, like, the Assassin's Order, right? Or the Templars are, like, writing them out of history and the like.
Yeah, and part of the charm of the Assassin's Creed story was, like, all of the people who die that were real historical figures die when it was recorded in real life that they died. Yeah. It's just our game tells you how they really died. Ha ha ha, assassins, yeah. Right? Like, that was cool.
Well, it's
right?
Pseudo-history, right? It's like, it follows history, but there's a lot that's different, changed. And it's like, history books, we know for a fact a lot of history is like, this is what's written. But who the fuck knows if the guy who wrote it is worth his shit?
Right. Well, you know, the great St. Patrick is a great example where, like, a lot of history tells that he was, you know, the snakes were pagans. you know, like him driving up the snakes. But no, like, actually, like, when you dig deeper, it's just like he was a really normal guy that literally just brought Christianity to the Isles.
Right. And, like, I heard that story and I was like, well, that's so fucking believable, those goddamn Irish Catholics, but it's like, no, it was a peaceful transition, turns out.
Yeah, it was about as, like, honestly, about as peaceful as it could be for Christianity.
It's actually really weird. There's a lot of times where Christianity was like you only ever hear about, like the Crusades and shit. There's actually quite a few moments where Christianity was just like, hey, guys, we got this cool god that you can worship, and they're like, okay.
Yeah, the only thing that we're going to change is that your legends, they're like the you know, Tuatha De Danann, for instance, for the Celts and the Irish. Yeah. I mean, I know somebody just rolled their eyes when I said Celts and Irish, but whatever. They were very, very integrated.
They're the same thing. Listen, as a Celt, I'm literally both Irish and Scottish heritage. I know how much it fucking hurts. Scottish mythology got fucking torched at some point, and Irish basically didn't. So yeah, exactly. I understand the pain here, but let's be real. That entire area is just Celtic or like the different Gaelic tribes, and then there's like the Pictish people and blah blah blah. But realistically, we can just call them Celts. They're all just Celts. It's so much easier to just think of it that way.
But anyways, the whole like thing that happened there is like, hey, you know, those aren't actually gods. They're angels.
It's like, yeah, maybe they did him dirty, but back to the topic of Assassin's Creed, though.
Speaking of doing people dirty.
I have a little bit of empathy for their decision, right? They obviously wanted to make a ninja game, right? Or a feudal Japan game, and they obviously wanted a black protagonist. But if they didn't go with the historical figure man as their lead character, and they like created a new one, that would be a second black person in feudal Japan. We know there's only one, right?
Well, I mean, there was plenty of black characters in Japan, well, black people in Japan over like long periods of time.
Now, but you heard it here, guys.
Yeah, really. The slip of the tongue. But anyways, it's like, I don't know. I think you're right though. And if they wanted to make him like, if they wanted you to play as a samurai and be a black character, and he was like a new person, they'd have to find some way for him to be written out of history.
They could have had you meet the one that existed. In fairness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what if you played as like a body double to him? I can actually be going
to go a body double to him, or you can play, you could do all kinds of things. Honestly, you could, if you really wanted to get spicy with it, you could literally be his love child with like the Shogun's wife.
Oh, fucking, actually,
Watch them make the girl Nobunaga's daughter or something.
Oh my god,
that
no.
would be so stupid. But I'm like kind of like half predicting it now.
That would Ubisoft.
Be worse. That would be significantly worse, for the record.
I mean, they're so bad at writing that I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, speaking of, so there's one other thing though, and I kind of made a joke about it earlier. It may not take place in Japan as much as people might think it does. I don't have a whole lot of confirmation because I don't have the game in front of me, obviously. The game's not out. So this may end up not being true, but there's evidence out there, which I don't have on hand right now, but maybe I'll look for it a little more deeper later, that they don't have a whole lot of Japanese people on the team and are mistaking Japanese and Chinese architecture.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's believable.
I don't, again, this is hearsay. I don't got a lot of evidence on hand at this current juncture. But there are people saying that it is happening. So
okay, complete sidebar. You need a hearsay button, Dylan. That's Amber Heard's attorney.
Oh, what was the quote from Amber Heard's attorney? I don't remember.
Hearsay? I mean,
I think he literally just said hearsay. Yeah.
Oh fuck.
Like, yeah, no, a lot.
A lot. Yeah.
So with Assassin's Creed, right? Maybe it takes place in China because they're ignorant. Maybe it doesn't. But
Chinese architecture anyways. It probably does actually take place in Japan, but
I know there's gonna be some gamers out there who will see a black protagonist and roll their eyes, and it's like, whatever. You weren't gonna buy it anyway. It's Ubisoft.
Yeah, that's probably true, honestly. Yeah.
And it's not the first time they've done this. Like they had a black protagonist for the PSP game, and then they had
Oh yeah, true.
Also they had standalone DLC for the fourth game where you played as the second mate who went on and did cool shit.
Right. That was actually a really good one too.
Yeah, it was DLC for the last good one they made, right? though it wasn't my favorite. But like,
I still think 2 is my favorite. 4 is good, but I think 2 is still my favorite. And 2 in all of its iterations.
Yeah, 2 is like really good, but I have a soft spot for 3.
Nah, 3 I'll is good,
but I fucked up and did everything into such a weird path. I don't remember 3 very fondly.
That's fair. We've talked about this on a show before.
Yeah.
Probably back in 2016.
Oh yeah, probably.
Probably. Holy shit. But yeah, so you can look forward to leasing Assassin's Creed Shadows for $120 when it comes
130.
out. Oh, it's 130.
Oh, tell me more about leasing my video games, Dylan.
Oh yeah. So Ubisoft was the person. The guy that said you guys need to get comfortable with not owning your video games, that was an Ubisoft executive.
I got it in front of me here.
Let's hear the breakdown.
$70. All right, if you buy it, this is if you pre-order the game.
Basic bitch version, right?
Right.
Bitch version, $70. Okay, well that I'm used to already, even though I don't like it.
You get the game, and you get the pre-order bonus, and I think the pre-order bonus is just like some costumes. It's like nothing major.
Something they'll release a year down the road.
But if you buy it for $110, okay, the gold edition, you get that, plus you get the season pass and 3 days of early access. It's a single player game. Who the fuck gives a shit about early access?
No. What? It's not early access. That's the actual release date. Let's be honest.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. No, exactly. You get it 3 days early, effectively. But then season pass, so DLC, whatever the fuck they're gonna have throughout the game, is something tells me that that's them gonna be selling you back content, right? Just knowing Ubisoft and how they act and how they work. Ultimate Edition, $130. All of that plus whatever the ultimate pack is. The fuck, I don't know. I don't got what's in these things, and also I bet you they don't even have, like, they're probably not fully like out there yet, anyways. Especially like the season pass. But here's the funny thing. Ubisoft fucked up, in my opinion. They fucked up bad. What you could do instead is you could do the day one with Ubisoft Plus. $18 a month. But what you could do is you pay $18 when maybe you wait for some of the DLC to drop, right? $18, beat the game in a month, you get the game for $18.
I mean, yeah, but that's no different than like PS Plus or...
Oh, no, you're right. But I think it's kind of funny because really Ubisoft doesn't have a large roster of games that people are going to give a shit to play for $18 a month.
$18 a month for Ubisoft's entire catalog is a piss poor deal.
Oh, bro, we can play the new Ghost Recon.
You know, the one that nobody liked.
Exactly. So it's just one of those moments where, like, I get what they're doing with that, and it's like, oh, we'll be a Game Pass competitor. No, you won't. No, you
also,
won't.
Also, I want to say, for something there, on Ubisoft, we talked a little bit on the side about them doing some stuff for, like, Siege, right? They literally recycled the current Siege plotline from the most recent Ghost Recon. The previous operative went rogue, which they're recycling also from New Vegas 2. Or not New Vegas, sorry. Vegas 2. Sorry, Vegas theirs was 2, just yeah. Rainbow Six Vegas 2. So yeah, no, the Ubisoft just literally is recycling their plot lines of over and over again.
I will at least say that because nobody played Ghost Recon, I'm okay with them recycling it in that regard. And Vegas 2 is an old enough game that I think they can kind of like do it like a love letter if you want to like really write that
off. I don't think that's a love letter.
But
that's just
right.
The writers not having...
But let's be real. We can see through it. We can cut through bullshit and realize that what it really is, they just probably don't have writers that either A, are lazy, or B, they just don't get them.
Yeah. So, honestly...
Or they don't get the time. They're busy making shitty Assassin's Creed games.
Right. While we're bullying the quadruple A studio, I do want to bully a different publisher.
You mentioned them as quadruple A, and I'm reminded that that stupid pirate game came out.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Skull and Bones.
I don't understand.
The best advertisement for the other pirate game that they could have had. What's the other one? The cartoony looking one?
Sea of Thieves.
Oh, Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, the best advertisement Sea of Thieves never paid for.
Bro.
Seriously.
Can I talk about that for a second? What the fuck is up with that? Sea of Thieves. I'm like, okay, listen. Sea of Thieves it's way too casual. It's hard to play because there's just no progression to it. All the progression is cosmetic, and it's a great game. It's a wonderful game, but like, it's just really hard to like play it for a long period of time with a group because there's just not a whole lot to do in terms of like feeling like you're doing things. It's just you kind of just play in a sandbox effectively. Anyways, I digress. But the game has such fucking good mechanics for pretty much fucking everything in the game. And no game has fucking stolen any of it yet. What the fuck, dude? Like, any game out there could steal their sailing mechanics and instantly have one of the best sailing games out there. Instantly.
Well, look, there was another pirate game that just was like, and we're gonna sink to the bottom. Black Wake, if you remember that one.
Oh, well, yeah.
Blackwake died for a different reason entirely, but yeah. Still.
But yeah, they just sank to the bottom. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there have been attempts at pirate games or naval combat games. They're just typically bad. There was a World War II based one, Battle of Midway or something like that for the Xbox. That one was pretty good. Or I think that was 360 era, but either way, that one was pretty good. But, like, by and large, naval combat games just suck.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is that a lot of them end up being too slow, or they punish you for doing mechanics that are, like, intrinsically in the game. Like, in Black Wake, as a good example, if you rammed the enemy ship, everyone in the lobby, including the enemy team, would scream over their mic at you. Because that's not how you're supposed to play the game. Well, bitch, why did they let me do it?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, so there was a... By and large, it's a sinking ship to make a sailing game. I don't know why, but multiplayer sailing games tend to flop miserably.
Well, I think it's also, like, in part, it's think about, like, this isn't necessarily sailing, but same idea, like, things like Worlds Adrift, is that everything is so slow to do. Like, once you're doing things, maybe it's not so slow, but to get to things, like sailing from place to place, or flying from place to place in the case of Worlds Adrift, it's just slow. And I don't mind that, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that do.
Right, well, and the other players kind of optimize the fun out of the game, right? Like,
that too, because
there's a ton of, like, you know, build the ship, make a floating house or whatever, and then, you know, Chad McThundercock is going to fly by and blast your flying... ship house out of the sky, and then you've got to spend the next 6 hours rebuilding your house.
Unless you're in GTA, that's still my favorite part about Worlds Adrift. Me and GTA were just like fucking around playing while everyone else like logged off for the night, and then like the Chad ship came by and they're like, "Join us or die," and we're like, "Nah, that's all right." and then I blew them out of the fucking sky with a single turret. It's so stupid. They were, like, blowing everyone out of the sky, just fucking dominating everyone they came across, and I just fucking nuked them, and I'm like, well, I think I just got really lucky, too. Like, just well-placed shots, and, like, one of those moments where, like, we lucked out real hard, but it was so funny. I just remember thinking back and thinking, like, yeah, they're probably yelling and screaming at each other in fucking Discord or some shit. Like, they were not having it.
That's great. I remember this story, too.
So funny, dude.
I miss Worlds Adrift. I thought
it's coming back.
What?
I don't think it will be as good.
Well, okay, so there's two games coming. There's the original developers. They're making a new game. This time with a better engine. One that doesn't charge them money to host servers, even though they're not using their servers. That's such a stupid shit show. But there's also Voids Adrift, which is being made by fans, and I think one of the original devs, which is going to be a recreation of the game, but it is otherwise a new game. It's like one-to-one, but made from the ground up.
Yeah, Forever Skies is one, but Forever Skies is not. It's a first-person shooter.
Yeah, it's going to be a similar idea overall, but it's going to have some key fundamental changes, yeah.
It was such a vibe, like, being in a large enough ship to fit, like, five or six dudes, but it's really cramped, and it's all, like, stuck together with glue, duct tape, and nails,
yeah.
And we're just flying to find people to go fuck up their day. Like, that was such a vibe, and...
Yeah, and it sucks, too, because, like, there's other games that have done this in the past, and funny enough, for similar... These games died for similar reasons that I think other sailing or ship-based games die, is Guns of Icarus. It died for the very same reason. It was so slow to get, even in the fucking arena mode, where you're there to fight other ships one-on-one or like in a group or whatever. To fly even around like the rock to see the other ship, it takes you like fucking 10 minutes. It was so slow. No, that's worse than most games, but still, it's like, Jesus.
I mean, I get those same vibes when we were playing PlanetSide 2 and we're just rolling around with a pack Sunderer full of our friends. Like, but like, it doesn't take forever to get somewhere.
Yeah, it might take you a couple minutes, right? But I can understand. There's some people that genuinely think that's too long.
Fair. Well, those that's that Call of Duty brain network.
I mean, that's Call of Duty brain, Zoomer brain, whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? But like, If that's how people enjoy shit, we can call it out and make fun of it all we want. This is not going to change the fact that that's how they enjoy things. That's not going to change their mind.
But yeah, so I guess... But yeah, we talked about sailing games. Now I want to talk about diving games.
Ooh.
Yeah, Helldivers. Right. So
right after... Like 30 minutes after we stopped recording last week, Sony made their announcement of, hey, we're going to, or last week, 2 weeks ago, Sony made their announcement of, hey, by the way, you know, that thing that we said that you were going to have to do, you're now going to have to do it, guys. I'm not siding with Sony here. I want to point that out from the get-go, but it was on the tip. Like, anybody who, like, says otherwise, I'm sorry, I didn't read the instructions would not hold up in court.
Yeah, so the Steam page did say that at some point the account would be required, but for a while it wasn't, and then somebody decided, okay, now's good. And
you've eaten for free long enough, now you gotta pay the piper.
Turns out now was not good. In fact, no. Never would have been better.
And so they, you know, shot themselves in the foot, got to... negative reviews within like 48 hours on Steam, and then reversed their decision because they're like, oh shit, we fucked up.
So
we fucked up bad.
And there's a little bit of detail along the journey, right? Like, at first, the outrage erupted in their Discord server, where one of their community managers, whose name I forget, he actually suggested to the community, hey, Sony's not going to hear you in here. You should go just negatively review the game. Like,
yeah. And he lost his job over that.
He did lose his job for saying that.
I honestly didn't think any of his takes were even that bad, is the worst part.
No, he was pretty okay, honestly. Like, I
can understand being a little bit annoyed with his first one. Because I think, right, if taken out of context in a vacuum, he is essentially being an asshole. But I think his sentiment was fair.
Right. Well, and that's part of what happened, actually almost exclusively what happened, is when you look at anything that he said, it'll be put on like the subreddit, and it'll just be what he said, out of context of literally anything else. Like, yeah. There was one guy who constantly is in the Discord just, you know, causing
bitching
problems.
Bitching and moaning.
And, yeah, bitching and moaning, but never, like, breaking the rules. So they don't, like, get rid of him. And he, at one point, was, like, clearly just made an exasperated, like, dude, I thought you were going to refund and leave. Why are you
still
here?
Oh, yeah, he did say that, didn't he? Fuck.
Yeah, and people take that out of context to be like, oh, look at our community manager being an asshole. But, like, honestly, I think he was well within his bounds.
Fair. Like, I would have done the exact same thing in his shoes, straight up. If you're going to say you're going to do something, and it's like a statement like that, and you've had enough, go, or I will help you go.
Right, well, and that's part of the problem when you have, like, public Discords like that. Because in our Discord, if we don't like you, we can just ban you, and who are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? Literally, what are you going to do about it?
We got a clause that I think more people should pick up, is that if we decide you don't mesh, we will just get rid of you. We don't need to have these rules. Those rules are just there for when we genuinely did, like, to lean back on them. Obviously, we are just a gaming community of friends. So I'm not going to fucking, like... I don't know, like, let's say Hydro. I'm going to pick out Hydro because he's listening to us. I'm listening to him right now. If he were, like, to post, I don't know, something slightly not safe for work in the gaming channel, I might just delete it and be like, what the fuck, dude? I'm not going to ban him over that. But if some random came in and did that, I'd probably ban them on the spot. and that's how it'd be.
If you've been in the server for less than 30 minutes, you have no protections.
Now, obviously, Helldivers can't do that, but they should still have a clause that allows them to ban people that are just effectively being nuisances. A catch-all.
And all you need, dear listener, to get that preferential treatment is to just sign up on our forum or the Discord itself and just say hello and play some games with us.
Yeah.
Be a friend. That's the plot armor right there.
I mean, what's the worst that could happen? You have some goddamn fun?
So... I'm not going to really recap a lot of what happened, like, because anybody who cares is already in the know.
Yeah. Yeah. The reality is we're a 2-week show, right?
Unfortunately for this one, yeah.
This shit, like, sort of came and went, though in some ways it's not over. We'll get to that in a second. But it came and went, like, between our episodes and...
like, over the weekend, it was already settled.
Yeah. So where we stand right now is most of the Helldivers players are back in good graces with the company, right? Or vice versa. However, the countries where you can't make a PSN account, the game is no longer being sold there. Correct. So places like the Philippines or the Vatican City or whatever, right? Like, you can't play there.
Fuck, the Pope can't play Helldivers.
I know.
Now, actually, funny thing about not being able to play Helldivers, so... This is kind of flying under the radar. I'm going to check right now to double check my numbers. So the player count has dropped about 50% in the last week.
Oh, is that a trend?
It has been an actual trend. I've been paying attention to it.
You know, I meant to pull up the numbers myself before we started recording, but I fucking forgot. So I'm glad you have that.
Yeah. No. So numbers wise, I think it's well within the acceptable, like, margins, for lack of better terms. But, like, in the last 30 days, it's been a 33% drop, which is about the same as the previous 30 days. But, okay. Like, in the last week itself, it's been about a 50% drop. Like, currently playing is on Steam, current total play, so is about 66,000. Which does match up with the total players. Says I can look at the total players online right now.
It's also a Thursday night, so, like, you know.
Right. But the third, but even with that, so last Thursday, right? Like, last Thursday, right now, they were looking at about 1,200, 1,300 people online from Steam. Or not 1,200, sorry, 112,000. I don't know, you... Brain hard, word hard.
By math.
So, yeah. But yeah, 112,000 versus 66,000, though. That's almost a 50% drop in a week.
Damn.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll bounce back. I think they will. But, like, I
mean, they will. But so, weirdly, I don't think it was specifically Mother's Day that did it, but Mother's Day was when the drop started.
That's actually funny.
Yeah, I don't know if Mother's Day was the reason for it, but yeah, on the 12th, we just saw a massive decrease in player count.
We kind of mentioned it a little bit before the show, but there's more than just, I guess, the issues with...
Yeah, there's more than just Sony, so, like... I'm going to do a rapid fire real quick. So they dropped a new war bond that landed with a wet flop. It was bad.
It landed in the bin. It was coming down, and it would normally land in your account, but instead it landed... It just went straight through the trash can.
Yeah.
So for the non-divers in our audience, that's... a war bond is like a battle pass, but it doesn't expire.
Non-expiratory battle pass that you can complete whenever.
A non-predatory one.
Yeah, a non-predatory battle pass. You know, if you really need more information about Helldivers, just look it up on your own. I promise it'll go a lot smoother than trying to keep up with our ADHD, three-headed ADHD monster that is us.
We are the ADHD Hydra.
So they've done that. Sony has continued to take L's in other departments. And Microsoft has also jumped into the party, which keeps I'm going to continue with the shit metaphor. Keeps the toilet bowl spinning.
Yeah, boy.
Because when Microsoft did a fuck ton of layoffs recently and studio closures, like, not just bad studios like Arkane, Austin, who... deservedly had their doors shut, honestly, after Redfall. But also the Tango Studios was Hi-Fi Rush.
Bro, that one hurts the most. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking. Actually goaded.
With Tango Gameworks, they made Hi-Fi Rush, and I think they also made Ghostwire. And
Ghostwire was mediocre, but it was a pretty okay game. If you're into that kind of game, it was good.
I think as a game, it was good. It was just so middle of the pack, it became so forgettable.
In AAA games that are middle of the pack, or might as well just not be worth buying, because $70 for that is
Consider is that the creative director for Ghostwire, who was a big influence in the company, as well as that company's leader, or studio, right? Yep. Those are two different people, and by the time Microsoft made this decision, those two people were both gone. Right. One of them went to made a new studio, and the other one left parts unknown.
Hold on. I know where she went. But...
If I had to wager a guess, the Tango Gameworks closure probably had to do more with Bethesda.
Yeah.
And them catching flack from Bethesda. Because Bethesda has not made them money in a while. Because Starfield was a massive flop. Well, I mean, I don't think it was a flop. I think it was... Again, commercially, I think it was Critically, I think it was a flop.
Oh, okay. I got it here, Dylan. Ikumi Nakamura, she went and made Unseen Tokyo. That was actually a while back. That was in early 2023.
But my point being with Tango is I think Tango, they lost the actual talent that Bethesda wanted them for already. And so they just kind of shuttered the doors. No shade at Tango, because Tango
obviously they were set up for success, and the people that were still there were ready for the next challenge.
Yeah, they were probably thought they were a safe company at that point.
Oh, probably. They were already in talks, apparently. The people that were the devs and stuff that were like, oh, they mentioned that they had successfully pitched the sequel. They were going to be let it, and then all of a sudden they were fucking fired, bro. What the
right,
hell?
And they had other bullets in the chamber that looked pretty good. I'm not into the game that they were presenting for Indiana Jones, but it looks like a good game. Or looked like a good game.
And you know what? An Indiana Jones movie tie-in game that actually was good. Well, actually, that wasn't around movie tie-in, but it was based on the movies, whatever. You're right. It looked actually pretty fucking neat.
I think, because I don't think Machine Game... Did Machine Games survive? I forget.
I don't remember seeing their names.
I don't know if the Indiana Jones games is going to get nixed, but it's possible. That's one of those things that you want to keep an eye on, is, just because the studio that your game that you're attached to is okay, doesn't mean that it's going to be okay, because they might have laid off a few key people that they're just like, yeah, we're not making this game anymore. Games get shuttered at the 75% development stage all the time.
Well, when a publisher or your overhead doesn't fully understand video games, it's very easy for them to just fucking, like, axe something without really knowing when they should be axing it or not.
Yeah, and, like, talking about Ubisoft at not axing things, like, their Star Wars Outlaws is currently getting, what do the kids call it, L plus ratio?
Yeah.
Oh, is it not Game of the Year material anymore?
No, their most recent, like, trailer they released for it, was like with the YouTube plugin where you can still see the downvotes, was like way more downvoted than upvoted.
Yeah,
that's great.
I think what these studios and publishers are gonna have to start realizing, or this is just going to be the death knell. What we're seeing right now will be the death knell, is that you can't play it safe in video game making anywhere.
Correct.
You just can't, and this is something I've been saying for fucking years now. Because I for a long time now, I've hated the really safe games that come out. And I'm like, why don't you just do something new and interesting? And everyone would always say, like, oh, well, it's easier to use an existing IP. It's safer to do this and that. And I'm like, well, but that's boring. And now that everyone else is catching up to me, the market is starting to influence in that same direction. And now... Well,
actually, you know what? This will tie into... So. I'm gonna, if I had a good, like, paper shuffling sound effect here, I would do that. I want to pull out a business report on Sony.
Let's hear it.
Way back from 2015. So I want to point out, this is important, even though this is decade-old research, because we start to see things that are pointed out here affecting Sony. Because this is about Sony. And a lot of people, you can point out a lot of problems with Sony, like, you know, with the fact that their servers are basically just open season for hackers. Like, I got a random fucking Venmo money for a settlement somebody did on, you know, everybody's behalf, even though I hadn't had an active PSN account at the time, a couple months ago, because they're just like, that happens that often. To Sony's servers, so like shit like that. You can look up, you go to any negative review of Sony right now, and you can find all the problems with Sony in that regard. This is a much more like umbrella things that we can start seeing take place. So kind of going through the abstract here, decision making and problem solving are important skills for any business. I know, we're looking for that word count, aren't we? Sony's a leading company in innovation, but they've lost their superiority in the new competitive world of innovation. Presence of new technology to solve business problems. Now, that sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook word salad. What that's really saying, though, is that their competitors have caught up with and maybe even surpassed them. This was right before Microsoft was like, yeah, so that console war thing... What if we didn't do that anymore, Sony? And what if we instead made all of our best games available just for streaming? That cool with you? Oh, no, you don't have a say in the matter. We're going to take your piece of the market share, by the way, Sony. Just letting you know that now. Like, this is right before Microsoft dropped their nuts on the table and said, yeah, you can have a console or not, but you can still play our games. And, you know, it took Sony, what, 4 years to catch up to that with PS Plus? Like, Sony went from being a market leader to playing catch up in this like 10-year period. And while Sony's first party games are arguably better than Microsoft's, I would say demonstrably better most of the time than Microsoft's, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. God of War can be a fucking phenomenal game, but if the only people who can play it are the people who bought PS5s, that's a tiny fucking market share.
Yeah, we learned this lesson with Final Fantasy 16. It was exclusive to the PS5, and like it did like pretty well considering how many PS5s exist that would be interested in buying your game, right? Yep. But it's like Square Enix has actually announced that they're changing their strategy to be multi-platform first going forward.
Absolutely.
And they should.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to dig through, like, in audio format the whole thing of this, but it's functionally what Sony has had a problem with lately is, you know, in lately being decade, yes, that's not a long span of time for a company like Sony. They have a lack of core competence. Like, they keep like throwing shit at the wall and hoping something sticks. You know, Forspoken was a garbage game, but even outside of games themselves, like the peripherals, like what's with the new fucking Sony handheld that isn't a goddamn handheld? It's just tied to your computer, or not your computer, your PlayStation 5, yeah. Right? Like
you need a PlayStation 5 to use it, if memory serves, yeah?
Yeah, it's basically you're streaming your PlayStation 5 onto an overpriced handheld. That's useless.
To be fair, though, from my understanding is that it does work for what they say it does work pretty good.
Yeah, like, but who wants
like
it?
Across several countries, even. I saw a guy using his in, like, an airport after he'd flown somewhere to his PS5 back home, and it was working fine. And so,
sure.
If that's what you want it for, it works. But to be fair, that's not what most people want it for. They wanted the PS5 in handheld form. They did, and they maybe they
I
didn't
mean they
want
would have accepted
PS5.
A PS3 in handheld form. Let's
oh
be
fuck
real.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
I'd be down for that.
Nobody was expecting a literal PS5 in their hands because that's a hard ask without holding the sun in your hand. Like
that's why those new handhelds are so popular, like the Steam Deck and the ROG Alloy, right? Like. Say what you will about their individual merits. I definitely have a bias for the Steam Deck, but like, yeah, sure, it may be hard to emulate literal PS3 games, but I can play new games that aren't ugly, and it's fine. Like,
yeah,
there's your PS3 in your hands. Like, you know.
But yeah, Sony's just constantly playing catch-up or solving the wrong problems. Like, that handheld isn't inherently a bad thing, but it should be sold as, like, an add-on to the PlayStation 5. For minimal dollars. It should be a loss leader for Sony, honestly. It shouldn't, like, because, like, that's what they were doing back in the PlayStation 3 era, mm-hmm. right? Like, they were losing money every time they sold a PlayStation 3, and they just made up for it with games because they produced better games across the board. Then we've got, not just that, but, like, their most recent VR thing landed with a wet flop, too. Like, nobody gives a shit, and they're still, like, just funneling money into VR. And VR just didn't happen, guys. Like, yeah, there's some cool VR here or there, but, like, across the board, VR came and went already.
Yeah, I think the issue with VR is that only I have very select handful of people ever tried to make actual video games. Even AAA developers only ever release novelty bullshit.
Well, I was going to say, there was one exception, the Half-Life one, but besides the Half-Life
Half-Life
game,
Alyx is, like, goated. It's, like, a genuinely good video game, not only
just... I also
heard
the Doom one was pretty alright, but the movement in it is so weird because you're, like, doing teleporting.
Yeah, but, I mean, and then there's, like, things like Derisine, which is actually, funny enough, Sony, which was, like, really, really, really beloved, but only a handful of people actually fucking played it. And, like, a couple of other things, like Beat Saber, that while they were novelty, they hit on the novelty that is just, like, an age-old trend of music video game equals good game, so...
But, like, also, a huge problem with VR is, like, you are forcibly limited to the amount of time that you spend playing that game, right? Like...
You can get used to, like, some of the, like...
Oh, no, I was talking about the physical aspects of it. It's like, when I play video games, I don't want to stand up. I'm going to be honest.
Or, yeah, I guess I get what you mean. It's like, regardless of if you want to, can, or otherwise, it's just, it will come a point in time where it's either you're getting tired, you're getting bored of being on your feet. You can't just sit down for a second when you're playing these games, unless you just straight take a break.
So. And taking a break... is very involved because, like, you've got to unstrap the things from your hands, unstrap the headset, you know, set aside, you know, assuming that you're playing one of the older models with the bajillion wires, set it all aside in a way that doesn't tangle it up.
And you need to dedicate space to it. So if you live in like an apartment or like a smaller living space, that's probably you moving your couch back.
Yeah, no, VR is just didn't happen for a reason. Like,
it's not accessible to a lot of people. Like,
functionally, that's what it comes down to. It's not very accessible.
Not until like a couple hundred years down the road till we have like full blown augmented reality, or not augmented reality, but
look, if we ever have like gamer style like rooms in our house for video games, great. But like,
yeah, it's not going to be out for a while.
We need a lot less people, so we have a lot more space devoted to living space. Because, like, that's not an apartment room.
Yeah.
Not until the gamer apartments come about and they're built with them in.
China apartments. You have your room, which is like your bedroom, which is literally like
your bedroom and kitchen are one room. The gamer room is the other half of the apartment.
Yeah, a 5x5 room that barely fits your bed. It's a closet that is the entire apartment and then the gamer room. fundamentally, the conclusion for like Sony's problem 10 years ago was like they need to do better planning. And I think we're seeing the fact that Sony hasn't been planning. And you can tell that they're still just like throwing shit at the wall, like with the restricting both Ghost of Tsushima and Helldivers in countries that are not PSN accessible.
Oh, we forgot to mention that.
I thought we did. Oh my god, my bad.
But pointing out, like, yeah, it sucks, but like such a slapdash job. Like they were putting U.S. territories that are just not literal states, right? Like on the list of no. But, like, they have U.S. addresses. They can get PSNs.
Yeah, it's so dumb. Like, so there's a big list of countries where you, for whatever reason, cannot make a PSN account. And so, just to recap slightly, the Helldivers thing, right? One of the things that Sony did was restrict sale of Helldivers 2 in regions where you can't make a PSN account, which is a weird move, considering they did say, we're not going to go forward with the patch that makes you have to have an account. Right. But for Ghost of Tsushima, they laid down the law. They're just like, nah, you don't need an account to play, but we have an online mode that will require it. Mm-hmm. So you can just not do that.
That's fine. I think that actually sounds okay.
Right. But you can't buy it at all.
You can't buy it at all. If you're not in those regions.
That is the legit issue. Yeah.
And this is the director's cut for PC that they're specifically talking about. With this, but it's such a slapdash job, like, because they make mention of countries you don't even need to worry about, like fucking Antarctica. Oh no, you researchers in Antarctica, fuck you.
It's like they can't play fucking Ghost of Tsushima. So Sony has a couple ways out of this. One, they should just lift that, they can lift the restriction.
Yeah.
Or they double down. If they double down, here's what they got to do. If they want everyone playing their games to have PSN accounts, they need to. Well, they should still lift the restriction. They should just let anyone anywhere make a PSN account. Like, that should be a thing. But to get PC gamers to accept that they need to go create another fucking account, release Bloodborne.
Ha!
Force them to use an account. They'll do it.
You know what? And honestly...
Hey, bro, if they release Bloodborne on... No, I'm just going to be real. I'm going to fold all cards on the table. If they release Bloodborne, but then ban me from buying it in Canada... I would do illegal things if necessary to acquire that on my PC. Illegal things, like straight up honest. I would. I don't know if it came down to it that I needed to like fist fight Phil Spencer to the death, be allowed to play Bloodborne on my PC. I would do it. Unfortunately, that'll only land me in jail.
What's Phil Spencer gonna do?
and probably some mental scarring doing to beating someone to death. But either way.
Hey, but Vic, think about it this way: you might be in an American jail. Which you might be able to attain a PS5.
Ooh, I could be like Al Capone.
Or, a Steam Deck, maybe, even.
Yeah.
Like, although Ghost of Tsushima is not supported on the Steam Deck, but, you know, whatever.
It actually runs fine on the Steam Deck, I've heard, but it requires a PSN account, so they don't get the listing as supported.
I see.
Like, that disqualifies you from Steam Deck verification.
Now, I did want to point out something, too, with the whole Sony of it all. How slapdash this thing is. Like, so they did this whole, like, if you don't have, like, if this country can't have a PSN account, and they're slowly walking it back in the places where you can make a PSN account. I literally think... And again, I never want to be like defending a large corporation. That's not what I want to come across as. But I think this is like the fact that they essentially sold a faulty product.
Yeah.
And this is a massive CYA on their part.
Yeah.
It may already be too late for legal purposes, but this is points in their favor if they're like, hey, that's our bad. We've restricted in these countries. So, like, And honestly, they should put out a return policy too if they want to also CYA, like continue, like a recall. For those countries affected, as it were. Because if you don't do these things, then your standing in a courtroom is a lot lower. You have a lot less maneuverability when it comes to this sort of thing. And I still think the EU is going to take them to task at some point over this.
Oh, probably. I don't know.
EU is very trigger happy when it comes to publishers fucking over players.
They've been pretty good at trying to fix that shit lately, yeah.
I think that this literally all this is right now is Sony trying to CYA because they don't want to be false advertising or any of the other business litigations that could come across their table because of this. I genuinely think that's all this is.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because we'd already moved on to the Xbox topic and we ended up going back to Sony because it's so easy to kick them while they're down. Like,
well, yeah, because Sony kind of deserves it. Let's be honest.
Honestly, I take a stance where I don't care if you're a single entity or a company, although obviously in terms of scale and money and budget and whatever, obviously there's some leeway in how you deal with these things. But if they're doing a good and right thing, I'm not going to shit on them. If they're doing a bad and stupid thing, I'm going to shit on them. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes down to the issue that, like, Sony could easily just do the right thing, regardless of, like, obviously there's legality matters, and they could, honestly, at that point, they should just explain that. People are going to bitch at them either way. They could at least take the moral high road and be like, listen, guys, it's our bad, but we legally, license-wise, could get sued if we don't do it like this. And I would be like, okay, that's fair.
Well, so there's something important.
I don't know if it's true for the record, but yeah.
There's something that's important when it comes to litigation. You never say I'm sorry as a company. Because as soon as you say the words I'm sorry, that legally is admitting fault.
Yeah, people, well, regardless of legally or not, it's just immediately everyone assumes that you're admitting fault.
Oh, no, legally is. Like, if you say, like, if you're in any sort of litigation and you're like come across and say, I'm sorry for doing this, or I'm sorry, whatever way you say it, it's essentially admitting guilt. And lawyers will run wild with that. So, no,
that's why
companies don't ever say, we're sorry, unless it's, we're sorry you. Like, we're sorry you feel that way.
Courts should have a thing about that not being allowed to be like taken that way.
Courts should be better. Well, many times litigation isn't about fault or blame. It's whether or not you can reliably prove fault. That's where people get a lot of things messed up when it comes to the legal system, at least in the US or most first world countries, is like we're not necessarily like we can go to the table knowing that this guy absolutely murdered that guy. And this guy's lawyer, though, is a lot better at argument and proving, you know, showing doubt in the proof that is brought by that guy's lawyer, that guy's family's lawyer. And so it becomes a debate. And regardless of evidence drawn, if one side is a much better debater than the other side, then you kind of have to go with the side that's better at their job.
Yeah, and that's often why a lot of high profile cases in the US get like a lot of like TV play and dialogue and discourse, because like people will watch it like a fucking sport almost.
Yeah, I mean,
and they'll get mad when the side they wanted to win loses.
Right. Like, we made a joke about Amber Heard earlier, but before her, like OJ was the most well-known case, you know, coming across. And like, whether or not OJ did the murder, his lawyer ran circles around the other lawyer.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it sucks. Yeah, it does. But, like, also, that's their job.
Like, right.
Their job is to argue your case better than the other side argues the other case. And, yeah. No, that's really what it comes down to in many court cases, is one side did a better job than the other. So, like,
especially
can't in good conscience do it.
Especially like, in high-profile cases where there's very little evidence and a lot of hearsay.
Yeah, no, like, that's...
then yeah. it really comes down to who's the better like arguer for a
right,
lawyer.
Because a ton of it, like, you know, like, we hate to see it with like sexual assault and all that, but like, that's why a lot of those cases go not for the victim, is because it comes down to he said, she said.
Exactly. Now, I, at the risk of delving into the political territory, we're not a political show, there are two cases that come to mind that deal with a wealth of evidence rather than a lack of, right, that were also of high profile that really divided the nation. The first one that comes to mind would definitely be the case between Derek Chauvin and the state for the George Floyd death, right?
Yeah.
Where, yeah, sure, he was overdosing on fentanyl, but he leaned on his neck for like 8 fucking minutes, and we all saw it on camera, right? He right. was convicted of murder. And I think that's fine, because like, he didn't need to do that. You can't prove that the fentanyl killed him, because like, well, he didn't have the fentanyl didn't have a chance to kill him because you were choking him, right?
Right, right, right.
But I mean, he might have died anyway. But that's not a very good defense.
But that's not a good defense. You're right.
So convicted of murder, right? And then the other high profile one was with Kyle Rittenhouse and those three people he shot, two of which died. And like, that case was dragged out really long, but there was a lot of evidence that made it really clear that he was defending himself. And then the one guy that he shot that did live admitted that he was gonna kill him, and like he pointed a gun at him first, and like, he like admitted on the stand that yeah, he had the intent to kill. So it's like, I mean, he kind of shot himself in the foot, no pun intended, on that one.
But yeah, those people were assaulting him, some of which with weapons, and yeah, he was in a bad situation, but like,
evidence is clear.
Yeah, like, he put himself in a bad situation, but it's like, at the same time, I wouldn't be like, oh, you know, she was wearing that red dress and she walked down that dark alley. She deserved what she got. Like,
so high profile cases in the United States, they rile up a lot of people. In the case yeah. of those last two I mentioned, the evidence was really clear who should have won. And in both cases, I think justice was served. But like, in the OJ case or in the, what's the other one?
The ones that used Amber Heard?
Amber Heard.
Donnie Depp. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, those is anybody's game. Right.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, it, like you said about shooting yourself in the foot, like, Amber spent so much of that case shooting herself in the foot.
Right.
Like, by
you
no
might as well have taped the gun to her fucking ankle, dude.
Yeah. By no means did Johnny come out, like, looking like a rose. Like, he's still, like, make no mistake, I think Johnny Depp is kind of a bastard.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Amber Heard, she's, like, 2 tiers above him for bastard status.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounded like he was just like a general asshole, not like in any legal sense, right?
Well,
but
right.
She seemed like she was like the conniving, manipulative asshole that every abusive relationship has, you know, one half of.
Right, and like you could easily see where a lot of Johnny's reactions were based off of just how badly she was treating him.
And you know what's funny? I actually have like some personal experience with some of this shit.
Dated Amber Heard?
Yeah. No. I had a real life couple that I was like really good friends with both. And eventually I took the side of one of them over some really nasty shit that was said. Some really like garbage shit. But it turned out that it was all coaxed. I was all coaxed because the person I sided with ended up being significantly worse behind the scenes that drove the other person's mental state down, and then they did stupid shit. Doesn't excuse what they did, but it's now understandable, and it makes the other person even worse.
Right. You're always responsible for your actions, but sometimes there's a good reason behind your actions.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and I guess to tie us back into video games, Microsoft sucks.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You know what, fellas?
Yeah?
Did you know? We are about to hit the golden ratio of episode length.
Hey.
Right, but we want to go a little bit above that so you have some room to cut.
Oh my god. I don't think we need to. I think we've done enough, actually.
Yeah.
For once.
We did what we came to do. Was there anything in the agenda that we didn't touch on? Just so we can bang it out real quick?
No.
Rapid fire, maybe?
It's all covered. Neat. The whole list is covered.
Oh, wait, there was one thing.
I forgot one thing and it's on the list.
Damn it.
You wanted me to talk about the Rising, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
All right, that's our last topic for tonight. Go.
So yeah, anyways, recently the Rising had its 1.0 update, and so me and some of the guys went and played it. I gotta say, I thought V Rising had a lot of things about it that I did not like. To be fair, it still has a couple of those things. I think any survival game with raiding as part of its PvP is just kind of cringe. Like, no game has ever really nailed it, and I don't like it. But you can turn that off now. I don't remember if you could turn it off before, but you definitely can turn it off now. And we were playing on a server without it. And they just made everything better. Like, grinding doesn't take for fucking ever to get items anymore. Brutal mode wasn't just like an HP and damage increase for the bosses. It actually gives them new moves. Like, they're different bosses now. Things like that. Like, the new zone is, like, tiered in a way that, like, you can enter it early. You don't need to be max level to go to it. So it gives you multiple options of progression and things to do. I gotta say, I'm really satisfied. I think they fucking nailed it for their 1.0. I was weary. Because V-Rising had some moments where I was like, not really feeling it in the past. But I'm really glad that they managed to pull it off.
I need to get my hands on this game. I think I might like it.
I think, weirdly enough, it's a game that's meant to be played on servers with like large amounts of people. And PvP is a large part of it. But I'll be real. For like a single time playthrough, like a single player experience, I think it could be done. Or maybe like co-op, maybe you and Destiny maybe play it. It is honestly really fun, and I think that the PvE alone is worth it.
I wonder if I can do like two people on one session. Like if I have the Steam Deck hooked up on the TV, can I hook up two controllers and play two characters? I don't know.
I wonder. I actually don't know.
That would be dope.
That's something they should look into, because I think they actually did nail the PvE, especially this time around. They nailed it.
I know most people think of the Steam Deck. They think, oh yeah,
It has LAN co-op listed on there.
Okay.
Yeah, so definitely I would say the PvE for V Rising before was never anything that I had the issue with. It literally was the PvP. It was wildly unbalanced. Like, there were clear, like, best skills to have. And before, too, you could, like, disengage, swap out skills, and then come right back.
Well, the co-op play isn't a deal breaker, right? Because like the way we play Risk of Rain is like usually I'm like on the couch with the Steam Deck and she's on her PC on the living room TV, or if we're playing with others, like I might be in the office room where I have Discord open and stuff, like I'm playing a regular fucking PC.
it does have LAN co-op though, is what I was saying though.
Well, that's not the same thing. That's like
no.
You're
that's
the same,
like
two computers
connected
in the same
directly
place
to each other.
Yeah.
Oh,
or on the same Wi-Fi now, if you will.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's really weird. That's a fair point. I don't know why they would list it like that, because that should be obvious. If it has online co-op, it should have.
I think LAN in this case is direct connection from one PC to another.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you could do like, it's not the same, but you can essentially do LAN across the world now, like if I have direct IP connection from my computer to yours, for instance. Right. It's not LAN in the actual, because local area network is what LAN stands for, right?
Back in my day, we had to use Hamachi to make LANs over the internet to make pirated games work on multiplayer.
Or like LAN parties in, you know, back in my day, where like four Xboxes connected to together.
I miss those days, man. LAN partying, I have to play fucking Halo Wars and shit. Ugh, it's so good. Or just Halo in general.
I remember playing like Armored Core 1. Like, you could do like a system link. And, So you have the full screen instead of a split screen, but you're still playing two player versus.
Like, I never had to do that, but I felt like that. It's a blast.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely think that they've gone the right direction with V Rising. I didn't think they were going to pull it out, honestly. I thought they were going to just kind of do more of what they already had, which was not the right answer.
Yeah, and no, I think they nailed it. Like, they made it so that there's new armor sets now, so you can have a build that's like static and you don't have to worry about like random stats and shit. They made it so that abilities across the board are a little bit easier to obtain. You don't have to fight the specific boss for them anymore. They're now tiered. They made it so that, to be fair, looking at all the spells, they all look good. I think there's a couple that look underwhelming, but like they all look like they have decent use cases and there's not a whole lot to worry about. And the skill gemming system, I think they enhanced that this time around too. I haven't done a whole lot of PvP yet, but it does feel like they've done a great job making the game
actually play the way that it was probably always intended to be played, which is nice. I mean, like, they could have easily dropped the ball. I mean, let's be real. Battlerite, their previous game, they did drop the ball with.
So. Right. Well, like, it's always trouble when it comes to, like, games, balance in games, because sometimes there really are clear best-in-slot choices without their intending to be. Like, in a game like this where it's like, oh, you know, you have many options, none of which are the wrong answer, but if there's a best-in-slot answer, then, yeah. Like, or the weapons before, because there were weapon skills, like, you know, like teleporting and shit tied to your weapon, right?
Yeah.
And, but, like, you know, when you went to PvP, people would be like, let me disengage for 10 whole seconds, change my entire loadout just to fight you. I don't know if there's still that problem, like, I think that a while back they changed it to where you can only reset your skills at your base.
So I think that what they made it now is that the combat timer lasts longer in PvP.
Okay.
And so,
really disengage.
Yeah, it's like 30 seconds. I think you genuinely got to, like, book it to do it. And at which case, most people are just going to run your ass down if you're trying to disengage that hard.
Yeah.
It's probably for the best.
Honestly, it is. Well, like, yeah, because there are no classes in V-Rising. It's all tied to your equipment. So, like, if you could just switch out your equipment to be a hard counter to whatever your opponent's rolling with, then it's not very good.
Which is also helpful with the way the armor system works now. So, like, if you were, like, going a heavy spell build, you could swap your weapons all you'd want. Your weapon isn't really your main tool anymore. So, like, that wouldn't work. Or if you went the other way and you went more towards your weapon, well, swapping your spells maybe give you some new utility, but realistically, that's not where your damage comes from. So it kind of, in a weird way, it skews builds, but you're picking which skew you take. But you're not going to swap that shit on the fly. Hell, if you were bringing, like, multiple armor sets with you on the fly, not only would you be, like, fucking yourself inventory space-wise, you'd be fucking yourself by, if you manage to die, like, if someone kills you, all of that gear will lose its durability, and you'll drop, like, I think it's, like, 12% of the mats for the enemy to loot. So
yeah,
you just can't do that anymore as much. Well, I'm assuming if you really fucking, like, were cheesy about it, there's probably a world where you could, but, like, it's significantly harder to do now.
Right. No, you can't just do it on the fly, which is essentially the issue that I had with the PvP before, was that you could just change your loadout and stuff on the fly, to the point where was 99% sure people were running macros to switch spells.
No doubt. Well, they're actually, apparently, I found this out, people were hacking before using mods that were undetectable, that would allow them to basically, like, timer things so that things would happen automatically for them. And apparently people were allowing, like, it got so bad that people just started allowing it on their PvP servers.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know much about it, moderating that, I guess.
Because it's not a thing anymore, but it was like, damn, that's wild. Fucking Jesus.
Well,
so, thankfully, that's not a thing anymore. We didn't play at the time that was a thing, but, you know, I wouldn't put it past people to have, like, rudimentary versions of it before it became a big thing, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's wrap up.
So, yeah, we've definitely hit the golden hour. You've got some time to,
totally,
you know, cut some bits and pieces. So, yeah, no, easy.
Well, everybody, this has been the Mellow Magic Podcast, the first Value for Value podcast about video games. I have a correction to make real quick. Earlier, we talked about that boost that we got from Merlin, and I rattled off some number of sats. That was my cut, not the amount that he boosted.
Oh, yeah, no, he sent us like it was like 5,000.
It was 5,000, so thank you so much, Merlin, for the 5,000. I stand fucking corrected. The number I rattled off earlier was just my cut. Anyway... You can catch Victim on twitch.tv at twitch.tv/avictimofgaming, where he is wrapping up Phantom Liberty and hopefully playing Xenoblade next. I don't know.
it depends. We got Ashes coming later down the road, and there's a couple of things like intermittently that I got to play.
Yeah, I mean, we might even have a problem with Valheim coming in.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. So what I might do then is, because I assume it's a slightly less time sync than... we might do Scarlet Nexus instead.
Steel Guard!
Hell yeah. I'm down for that. I love Scarlet Nexus so much. You can catch me on the Fediverse at shitposter.world/Dylon. I'm also on the Noster Network at Dylon at melomancy.cafe. And you can find Rick on the Fediverse as well at skooma_dealer at shitposter.world. This has been episode 88 of the Melomancy Podcast. We'll see you later.